Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. We had to cut our program short last time, but it actually wasn't short. We just were having so much fun talking about Robert C. Thaler's book, A Whole Life, that it's so easy to run out of time so quickly. So today what we want to do is we want to just jump right back to where we left off. And for all those who listened in last week, we were on page 5, and we were talking about the very opening scene in the book as a contrast to the scene with Marie later in the book. And Andreas Egger is trying to help an older man from close to where he lives in a village down a mountain. He's carrying him on his back, and the old man is definitely dying, and so they have this discussion about death. And Andreas is much younger than Horned Haynes, who is, he reminds me of some old codger, but he's an old goat herd. And so he's just ready to give Andreas his explanation of death. And he says, "I say," this is Horned Haynes, or I think his name is Johann Kaliska, if you look at the book. And he says to Andreas, "I say death brings forth nothing at all. Death is the cold lady." And so here, I was saying last time that C. Thaler, his book is very well written. It's full of surprises. It's full of suspense. And he does introduce this death as the cold lady. And even Andreas says, "The what?" And he says, "The cold lady," repeated Horned Haynes. "She walks on the mountain and steals through the valley. She comes when she wants and takes what she needs. She has no face and no voice. The cold lady comes and takes and goes, that's all. She seizes you as she passes and takes you with her and sticks you in some hole. And in the last patch of sky you see before they finally shovel the earth in over you, she reappears and breathes on you. And all that's left for you then is darkness and the cold." Now, that's really great writing, but it is really kind of chilling. And I think I was saying in the last program, I think this is where our sophomore students, they had really had trouble getting past this part. Because when you're young, you don't think about death. We all know that. And I was telling everyone last time, I'm going to be 65 this May. I don't feel 65. In fact, in my mind, I still feel like I'm 19. I know I can't do what I used to be able to do at 19, but I still think I can. But anyway, even Edgar looks up into the snowy sky, and for a moment he feared something might appear there and breathe in his face. And he says, "That's bad." And then Horned Haynes says, "Yes, it's bad." And Horned Haynes said, Horned Haynes, and his voice sounded raw with fear. Neither man stirred again. The silence was now overlaid by the quiet singing of the wind as it swept over the ridge, dusting up wispy pennants of snow. Suddenly, Egger felt a movement, and a moment later, he tipped over backwards and lay on his back in the snow. Horned Haynes had somehow managed to loosen the knots and, quick as a flash, clamber out of the frame. He stood there, quietly beneath his ragged clothes and swaying slightly in the wind. Egger shuddered again. He says, "You get straight back in," he said. "You'll catch something else otherwise." Now, we'll stop there, and I'll finish the rest of the story. Essentially, what happens is Horned Haynes runs off into the mountain. Essentially, you get the feeling he did not necessarily want to face death, but yet he ran off into the mountain. And so this left a lot on Andreas's mind. And, of course, as you remember from the last program, my wife talked about Marie then. And so he leaves this scene, goes down into this little restaurant or this little pub, you'd say, and he starts drinking schnapps And that's where he meets Marie. Now, when I first read the book, I didn't realize this was Marie, but it is, it's Marie. So the whole concept there of death is what really kind of got to our students. And again, they wanted me to reassure all of you that they really did like this book in the end. But let's talk about the cold lady for a minute. So let's go back to Derry here. Is death something that's on the German mind all the time?
Well, I think it probably, it figures in that culture as it does in almost any other culture, that it's certainly present and there. It's interesting that the German, at least the way it's presented this book, is viewed as the cold lady, whereas in other cultures it's not necessarily viewed as the cold lady because they're not living in alpine, snowy areas. But someone living in that area would find a cold lady is sort of a personification of death. And the, you know, we see it as the Grim Reaper because we're an agricultural mm-hmm. society and have sort of developed along those lines. But they would think it as a cold lady that would appeal from the standpoint of what they dislike in their culture, which is extreme cold.
Mm-hmm. So even though the snow is beautiful and even though all the alpine trees with snow on it, even though the crisp air can be refreshing, they still don't like it when it's really cold.
Right, right.
Just like we don't.
That's right. That's true. And there's a duality in this too, which goes all through the book in various encounters. And there's this duality of the beauty of nature and then the peril that it also presents. So that nature is a beautiful thing, it's to be embraced, but it also can kill you.
Right.
And there are many, many things in the book that follows through that thinking.
Right. Well, the one thing I think it's interesting is here he is, a young man, and what Horned Haynes says to him terrifies him. But obviously Horned Haynes really doesn't give a whit about dying, because here he is, totally exposed. He's up on a mountain. It's got to be very icy. He's much older than Andreas. And so he's only in his ragged clothes. When Andreas finds him, he's under all these goatskins, trying to stay warm. His fire's out. He's not even well enough to build his own fire. But yet, he runs off into the hills. Now, to me, some people say, well, he's running away from death. Well, maybe the opposite's true. Maybe he was running towards death. Maybe he wants to get it over with.
Could be.
And so he goes out, and he does freeze to death. But what I think is interesting, though, when Andreas then becomes older towards the end of the book, and I think one thing, the title is really true. It's a whole life. And so you capture all of Andreas's life till he dies at the end of the book. And so, but I think it's interesting is that the very end of the book, Andreas loses his fear of death. And when he sees the cold lady, how does he see her?
Well, in terms of Marie.
He sees her as Marie. And so if you remember what Deborah said last time, at first he looked at Marie as she was like a warm piece of wood that had been warmed in the sun. And so to me, again, it was a big surprise to me. And in fact, I didn't even get it at first that when he saw the cold lady, he sees her as Marie. So that's on page 136. I just wanted to go back there and read this again, because his writing really is arresting. And if there's time, you know, as we go through this, and I can almost see now, I originally scheduled only two panel discussions for this book, but it looks like we're going to need a third. And we probably could probably have a fourth and a fifth and a sixth, but we'll have to end it sometime. But anyway, if you look at page 136, and hopefully all you listeners out there have the book in front of you, because he really does write very, very well. But this is towards the end of his life, and he's lived a long life. Sometimes it's been productive, sometimes it's not been so productive, and we're going to cover some more of these things. He certainly had a very rich life. But he says that Seethaler is writing here. He says, it was at this time, the time after the snowmelt, when in the early hours of the morning the earth steamed and the animals crept forth from their holes and caves, that Andreas Egger met the cold lady. He had tossed and turned on his mattress for hours, unable to sleep. Later, he lay there quietly, arms folded over his chest, and listened to the sounds of the night, to the restless wind, prowling about the hut and knocking on the window with muffled thumps. I remember at the beginning of the book, he talked about the cold lady could breathe on you. And now there's this wind is tapping at the windows. It kind of reminds me of, some of the other poems that I've written. I mean, not written, read over my life. And so it says, the restless wind prowling about the hut and knocking on the windows with muffled thumps. Suddenly there was silence. Edgar lit a candle and stared at the flickering shadows on the ceiling. He extinguished the candle again. For a while he lay there without moving. Finally he got up and went outside. The world was submerged in impenetrable fog. So it is almost gothic, the scene here. It said it was still night, but somewhere behind the soft silence, day was dawning and the air shimmered like milk in the darkness. Edgar took a few steps up the slope. He could hardly see the contours of his hand before his eyes, and when he stretched it out in front of him, it looked as if he were plunging it into a deep, fathomless body of water. He walked on, carefully, step by step, a few hundred meters up the mountain. Far away, he heard a note, like the long, drawn-out whistle of a marmot. He stopped and looked up. The moon hung in a gap in the fog, and white and naked. Suddenly, he felt a breath of air on his face, and the next moment, the wind was back again. It came in solitary gusts, picking the fog to pieces, shredding it and chasing it apart. Edgar heard the wind howling as it swept around the rocks higher up the mountain and whispering in the grass at his feet. He walked on through the streaks of fog that scattered before him like living creatures. He saw the sky open. He saw flat rocks with remnants of snow on them, as if someone had covered them with white tablecloths. And then he saw the cold lady crossing the slope about 30 meters above him. Her form was completely white. At first, he mistook her for a wisp of fog, but a moment later, he clearly recognized her pale arms, the threadbare shawl that hung around her shoulders, and her shadow-like hair above the whiteness of her body. A shiver ran down his spine. Suddenly now he felt the cold, but it wasn't the air that was cold. The cold came from inside. It sat deep in his heart, and it was horror. The figure was heading for a narrow rock formation, and although it was moving swiftly, Edgar couldn't see it taking any steps. It was as if some hidden mechanism in the rock were drawing it on. He didn't dare move. The horror sat in his heart, yet at the same time he was strangely afraid that he might chase the figure away with a noise or hasty movement. He saw the wind catch her hair, exposing for a brief moment the nape of her neck, and then he knew. Turned around, he said, "Please turn around and look at me." But the figure kept on receding, and Edgar saw only the nape of her neck and the reddish sickle of her scar shimmering upon it. He says, "Where have you been so long?" he cried. "There's so much to tell you, you wouldn't believe it, Marie." And he says, "This whole long life." And so here he's chasing the cold lady, and because of the scar, you have to remember these details. I mean, one thing I try and tell our students is that when an author sits down and writes a book like this, there is a lot of preparation. There's a lot of thought going in it. And so usually, books just don't appear on a page. You have to really work. And of course, he does take a lot of detail to tell us that Marie has this scar on the nape of her neck. And now here the cold lady has the same scar. And so you know it's Marie. And what does he want to do is he wants to tell her about his whole long life that he actually lived without her. And so anyway, we ought to probably talk a little bit more about what happens to Marie. Who would like to do that? I'll just... First one that gets
okay,
that.
Okay, well, you want me to talk about
okay,
it?
Okay, I'll let you talk about
okay,
it.
Okay, well...
I know she wants to.
Well, I was trying to figure out how long that they actually were married. I think they're probably only married about 4 years from what it says in the book. And they were very happy. It doesn't really say what their wedding was like, but after the proposal, that dramatic proposal, it just, they were just... they were just husband and wife, and so he was they were just very happy. But it, she let him know that, that she was pregnant and they were going to have a baby. But then one night, his perfect life was changed by tragedy, and there was an avalanche. He was woken up by a sound. He heard some kind of a sound, and he went out and was walking around, and then that's when the avalanche came, and he actually broke his legs. His legs were broken, and then Bree and his whole house and everything was covered up. So it was very sad, and it does talk about how sad he was, but even after that tragedy, he still moves on. And it does say different times in the book that he remembers her, and the memories that he has of her seem to help him. So it's kind of like she's like with him throughout the rest of his life, even though she's not really there, but he remembers her and the memories help him. And then, so you can see why then when the cold lady comes and it's time for him to die, that, you know, it's Marie. And so it's not so bad then when he realizes it's Marie, you know, so, you know, in that way. So, that's mainly what I wanted to say. So, but they were only married by 4 years. So it was only a really short period of time that he was really, really happy. And the rest of his life, he went through a lot of different horrible things, but he always had this peace. It seemed like he just always kept on going. There was always like he never really complained. He did not complain. It was just the way life was.
Yeah, I think that's why a couple programs ago I talked about the New York Times interview with him, and the person interviewing him said that he looked at it as a heroic novella. Mm-hmm. And basically, I think why he sees it as heroic is that you can't put this guy down. I mean, he would just pick himself up and keep moving. And it really is a very heroic way to live. And I tried to get this across to our students as well, that, you know, you can live a whole life, and you don't have to have the fastest sports car, and you don't have to have the biggest house, and you don't have to have, you know, absolute excitement every second of your life. You can have a great life, and you can have a great life being a lumberer, you know, a lumberjack, or you can have a great life, you know, living in the mountains and farming. You don't have to have, this big CEO job or, you know, whatever. Not that you shouldn't try and be successful. And that was a really hard concept for them to get. You know, they just think you have to have the top of everything. So
I think it's interesting that this whole episode with Marie and Marie's presence in the book, that she really provides, if you look at a fulcrum, she's a fulcrum for his whole life, because his whole life is really based on the relationship with Marie and how that gives perspective to his life, both before her and after her. And so she plays a really central part, very short, very brief. She's there like 4 years of his life, but for his whole life, she becomes, you know, the fulcrum of his life. And it's an interesting comment when you think about the title of the book, A Whole Life. There are certain events that we have in our lives that serve as those kinds of key points in our lives that give meaning and sometimes balance to the whole life, even though they may be very short, but they're very meaningful. And that's what Marie was for Andreas.
That's really true. That makes a lot of sense. Yes.
I think that also helps to explain, there's another woman in the book, Anna Haller. And if you haven't read the book yet, you find most of her story on page 118 to 127. There's not a whole lot I want to read there. I don't think we are going to run out of time again. And I thought it would be like this because it's such a fascinating book. But if you notice, Anna Haller, I think she was a spinster all of her life, and she saw these wonderful qualities in Andreas because he was, you know, a hard worker. I think it's interesting, you know. We need to talk again. We're going to have a third panel. I can tell we're going to have to talk about his stepfather and what his stepfather did to him. And you go back and forth, but the book does the same thing. But I think she was very disappointed because Andreas really couldn't fall in love with her. And why couldn't he fall in love with her?
The presence of Marie, I think, in his mind.
The presence of Marie. That's right. The presence of Marie in his mind, and he did have one love in his life. And even though she was gone, he still, in her mind, in his mind, there was these memories, and it's the memories that kept him going. We just finished in the sophomore English class. We just finished reading Out of the Silent Planet. And it's a really interesting book, and I might want to actually do this on the radio sometime. It was written by C.S. Lewis. It's old. I mean, it goes back to when I was, 20. So that's like 45 years ago. It was probably older then too. But if anybody has read that, there is this species of people called the Haras or the Harosha, and they were poets, and one character in there, I think his name is Ransom, yeah, and he was a philologist and he liked to walk, but anyway he gets stolen, kidnapped and taken to Mars, and he was really shocked that they only, as a species, they only would father one child per life, and he said, well, what if your wife dies? Well, she dies. That's it. There's only one wife. There's one child. And what he says, but it's the memories that are important. It says the memories keep growing. And I think one of the big touching scenes in the whole book is when he writes this letter to Marie while he's held prisoner in Russia. And that's on page 88. And, in some ways, he really did have a whole life, but here she's dead, and he's been, he's in Siberia, been in this prison camp for 8 years, and he writes to her. He says, "My dear Marie," he said, "I am writing to you from Russia." Now she's dead, but he says, "I'm writing to you from Russia. It's not that bad here." Now, when I read it, it's very bad there. He practically froze to death and starved to death. Says, there is work and something to eat, and because there are no mountains in the sky, the sky is wider than the eye can see. The only real bad thing is the cold. It's a different cold to back home. If only I had just one little paraffin sack like the ones I had so many of back then, it would be all right. It says, but I don't mean to complain. There are people lying stiff and cold in the snow, and I am still looking at the stars. Perhaps you can see the stars, too. I'm afraid I have to end here. I only write slowly, and it's already getting light behind the hills. Your Edgar. Now, that's great writing. But it's also, I think it really reveals his personality and his character. That he can see the good no matter where he is. And that is so hard for people today in our society, in our world. We have so much material things, so many, and yet we're still not happy.
Well, and he states right here in this letter that to him what's important is there is work and something to eat. I mean, those are the essentials that you need, Mm-hmm. Anything else is an embellishment of life.
Right.
But the essentials are something to eat and work, and that's
right.
He's got that. He's okay.
Right. So, yeah. So anyway, I hope you're really enjoying this series. And again, if you have not gotten the book yet, you really need to pick it up as soon as you can. It looks like we're going to have another panel. But there's so much more that we want to talk about. I mean, if you look at what's mentioned in the book, Grace Kelly is mentioned in the book. And now that goes back even further than I do. I mean, she was older when I was young. Edgar does finally go off to help in the war, World War II, at the end of the war. He wasn't accepted when he was younger because he was handicapped with his hip. But C. Thaler really incorporates a lot in this. He gives Edgar's view of life, and Edgar keeps saying what life is like, and what should be like, what it should be like. There's a great part of the story is about when they begin to build cable cars in the mountains and what that does to the environment, and but yet it brings in progress, and that there's all that discussion that we still have to do. And so there's a lot of picturesque writing. And again, the book is just chock full of humor, and there's some really funny things that we need to talk about. So you can write me comments, and I do like to get comments, both negative and positive. But if you'd like to send me some comments, please send them to jbl@pcog.org. You can also follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. The address is facebook.com/justthebestliterature. And again, you can run that all together, no grammar errors with doing that. So until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.